Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club, the parenting podcast with a difference. I'm Gemma, your host, and I say another episode of the Send Mum Club. It's the Christmas special episode of the Send Mum Club. I'm going to be honest, I might have bigged that up a bit too much saying Christmas special. It's the Christmas episode, there we go, of the Send Mum Club, because I am super excited and very ready for a little bit of time off. I'll be back in January, don't worry, but I wanted to leave you with something a little special for Christmas. But before I get into what that is, I'd just like to say I hope that you have an amazing Christmas, whatever that looks like for you, because after having all these chats with these wonderful guests on my podcast, I realise that your Christmas may not look the same as my Christmas, and my Christmas may not look the same as somebody else's. And I'm very aware that some of those things that your children might absolutely hate might be quite difficult to let go of. I've spoken to women whose children hate wrapping paper, who don't like presents. Some people will be overstimulated by lights and Christmas trees, and whatever it looks like for you, that's okay. And I hope that you have the most wonderful time with your child or children, with your families. I hope you get some sleep. I hope you get some time off and a little opportunity to have some me time, because I don't know about you, that's exactly what I need. I'm hoping to actually read a book. What a treat. Anyway, what I decided to do, I did this in the summer, and it was really nice for me actually to listen back and to remember these chats that I've had with these wonderful guests on my podcast. So I'm going to leave you with a collection of advice from the previous episodes from the end of summer until now. So when I was listening back to these, it just made me feel so lovely, because I have these chats and I would normally say women, but there's a man that snuck on an episode recently. And actually, I think I might do a little bit more of that in the new year. It will be predominantly mums, but I think sometimes it's nice to get a dad's perspective, or maybe a sibling's perspective, on growing up with a child with additional needs. And I do have somebody in mind that I'm hoping to get on to chat about exactly that. But in this episode, you can hear the lovely girls from Rebounders. In fact, we'll start with them. Kirsty Bailey, who came on to talk about autism after that horrendous statement from Trump and the Tylenol and that ridiculousness that happened a few months ago. There's advice from Charlie, my co-host on the radio, Adam Whale, talking about his experience of parenting his son, Toby, who has sensory processing disorder and autism. Kelly's in there, the wonderful Zainab. And do you remember I did the expert episode? There's also a little bit of advice in there from a therapist on how to help yourself if you are struggling as a Send Mum, or I suppose just struggling in general. So I hope that you enjoy listening back to these wonderful bits of advice as much as I've enjoyed listening to them. Let's get into it.
Have to be when I was worried that Chloe was having a lot of meltdowns, that somebody said to me, "You're her safe space." Mm. That's why she does it. Yeah. And it just clicked then. I was like, wow, you know, it's like all the pressure that you can put on yourself, it just went. I was like, that's it, you know, she can 100% be herself, and you know, that's what you want as a mum.
Yeah. I think probably mine was with when I think Nathaniel was just going towards year six, and it was the Senko, and he was an absolutely fantastic person when I was maybe going through that phase, which I wasn't sure how for Nathaniel and what avenue would take him. But he just turned around and said to me, "You're Nathaniel's biggest advocate because you're his mum, and you know in your heart what to do and how to support him." Yeah. And whatever you decide will be the right decision for Nathaniel. And it was just like one of them, like, oh, moments. Yeah. And I was thinking, it was like, yeah, of course, like, why am I think as a mum, you're constantly like second guessing yourself, and oh, is this the right way to go about it, or should I do this? Mm-hmm. And it was just that, like, you're his mum, you're his biggest advocate, you know what the answer is. Mm-hmm. And it was, and it was, yeah, it was just sometimes hearing that from somebody else, you're like, right, okay, I'm going to take that on board. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was definitely a nice moment to experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd say, I think with advice, the main one initially from our consultant when she first said about the diagnosis is she'd said to stay off social media. She said, stay off Google and stay off social media because they are not an accurate representation of your life and what is going on in front of you. And I think, even though I think social media has been great eventually for me to have a bit more of a community, to get help with certain things, I think in those early days, it was absolutely brilliant advice because I was looking for answers really that weren't there and it was very, very dark and difficult. So I think that's really good advice. I think that comparison part, especially on social media, just is not healthy for you when you're processing something so early on. I think that was brilliant advice and we kind of heeded that initially. And as I said, once you've got your confidence and you know what you're dealing with, then it's easier to be able to combat the darker side of social media, I think.
To cry and move on. There is nothing wrong. Like sometimes I'll sit here and a kid will go past on their bike and Tommy can't do that. And you feel that sinking moment. And that's okay. Cry. Have that moment, but just don't stay there.
I love that because when we were in therapy, we were talking about what acceptance meant. And acceptance doesn't mean, oh my God, I'm absolutely fine with this 100% of the time.
Yeah.
It means in general, yes, this is fine, and accepting that there will be moments where it doesn't feel fine. And I like
we
that.
Don't
stay there, move on.
Even people with typical kids, they don't love their kids 100%. Well, they love their kids 100% of the time.
Like
they don't
them.
Like their kids 100% of the time. I got that round the wrong way then. They don't like them 100% of the time. That's okay. Just don't stay there though, do you? You don't like them for 10 minutes or an hour or whatever, and you're like, God, you're doing my head in. But you love them, and that's okay. And it's exactly the same thing. Be a bit sad, but just move on.
This is very specific to me, but there is a general message behind it. So when Easter was born, she had trouble feeding. So we were in hospital and they put an NG tube in. So she was being fed through her nose. And it was a really difficult time for me, actually. That was much harder, I found, then receiving her diagnosis was being in hospital. I found it a very negative and draining experience, and telling me all these things that she's going to have horrible in her life. It was awful. And I hated the tube, I'll be honest. I absolutely hated the tube. And I felt, I just really hated it. And this woman from PADS, so Down Syndrome UK, she'd reached out to me and said, oh, I saw that you've joined the new parent group, so I see that Easter's been born, like, how's it going? And I was telling her about it, and she said to me, like, Charlie, like, no, like, because they basically just kept pushing me to use the tube rather than try and feed her with the bottle. And I was saying, like, I don't understand how she's ever going to learn if I'm just forcing the tube then and not even giving her a chance to try. And they always say about low muscle tone with Down syndrome, which I'd read, and I knew the chances that she would get a tube, but like, I just, and that was fine, I didn't mind using the tube if she was done, but give her a chance to learn. And this woman said to me, Charlie, like, you know her, you're the one with her every time, you know her and you're her voice now. So you need to tell them that, no, you are going to try and you are going to, like, give the bottle every time, and we can use the tube as a backup. But, you know, not every child is the same. Not every child with Down syndrome is the same. And she said that they're kind of just projecting what they've seen in the past onto Easter. And so they're treating her how they would treat any other kid with Down syndrome. And that's not right, and that's not always the case. So that was the best advice, because since then I did speak to them and I said no, and she doesn't have a tube, and she ripped it out at 3 weeks old, and she's never had to have it put back in, thank God. But I feel like, yeah, I am her voice now, and that really kind of gave me a kick up the bum, to be honest, to kind of be like, I need to say it, and I don't need to worry about other people's feelings. But also what she said about not every child is the same. And one of my other friends said to me as well, like, they all, you know, like, our kids have Down syndrome, and, you know, with they might be treated the same like in hospital. They might be said, oh, this is what it is because they've got Down syndrome. But every journey and every child is different. So you just need to do what's right for you and treat Easter how she needs to be treated. You're the one that knows that. I'm not saying don't listen to doctors because they are very clever, but they don't always know what's the right thing. And I would say a lot of people in, you know, who have children with special needs will have researched and looked into everything in detail. I know I am. Like, I'm such a researcher, so I like to know everything. And so that's a very long-winded way of saying every child is different. And you do know best, you do. Be confident in that as well, like that you do know, and push for what you think is right.
I love that advice. And I think it's interesting to think, like, I wonder what the outcome would have been if you hadn't have carried on trying the bottle.
I honestly think that she definitely, I'm not saying that people who still have NG tubes haven't done the right things at all. I think for, like I say, for Easter, I think that was the right thing. I think she just needed to get practice. And without that, I do think that she would have had it a lot longer than what she did.
It's a good lesson, though, isn't it, in give everyone the chance.
Exactly. If you're not given the tools, you're never going to learn how to do something like her. If she's never given the chance to use a bottle, she's not going to just know how to do it, is she?
So, look, early intervention, I think, is really, really important for these children, because a child's brain is like a sponge, you know, when they're younger. They can absorb so much more. And a lot of, that's not to say when they get older, you know, they can't, you can't support them. No, of course not. But those early years are really crucial. And I think it's really important to just be able to reach out to the right people, professionals, to support your child. But like we said earlier, is to take it at your pace. Do not overwhelm yourself at all. And I think that's really important, because a lot of families, especially, you know, it is changing, but a lot of people from my own community, for instance, sometimes they just bury their head in the sand and just ignore it all and just hope, you know, things will change naturally. So, yeah, advice-wise, I would say try and get, you know, those early years, the support that the child needs is really good. But also support for you as a parent. And when I, in those early years, we were going through some really challenging times with my eldest. It was so difficult and overwhelming. And I remember going to a course. It was by a charity called Parenting Special Children. And there were two professionals there who were also parents of neurodivergent children. So it was really lovely to just speak to them and just like have, like we've been talking about a lot in this podcast, like being able to relate to them. And we were talking, I think the session was about mental health and like how to support yourself as a parent. And I remember them saying, it's really important to do small acts of like kindness to yourself that's going to make you feel better. And I literally put my hand up and I was like, sorry, with all due respect, what's the point? Because if I do all these little things, what's the point if I go home and my child is having a massive meltdown, you know, for over an hour, that's going to drain all of my energy? And I remember, I think I was like crying when I was asking this question, because we were going through like a terrible time. And they were like, trust me, it's important, because you need those pockets of space. You need those pockets of like well-being. And honestly, I'll give that advice 100% now. Because when I started to practice that, I really noticed the difference. So I was a big emotional eater. So whenever we were having a bad day, I would just go to the kitchen and just sit there and just cry and just, you know, stuff my face. And then I realized, you know what? If I'm actually feeding my body with the right things and hitting the gym, then I'm going to feel better in myself, even though we're having a crap day at home. If I make sure that I plan to see, you know, friends who generally, you know, like are a positive impact in my life, like friends who genuinely, you go see them, you're just going to laugh all evening. If I make sure I go to see them like every so often, that's going to be really helpful for me. If I, like, I love reading. If I read and I just find that escapism in books, then again, that's going to be another thing that's going to really help me. So those little things, really over time, it really made an impact, because if we were having a crap day, I wouldn't feel like overly rubbish, because I know that I've you know, done something for myself that has really helped my own well-being. And trust me, in practice, I know it's easier said than done, but in practice, if you can find anything that brings you that pocket of joy, then do it, because over time, you're going to notice the difference to your well-being.
I found such a hard question.
This is why, right? Just in case you're potentially going to come on or you're thinking, oh, I'd love to come on, I always give everybody the heads up a couple of days before so people have a chance to think about this one, because I know I would struggle with this.
The first kind of thing that came to mind, actually, which really surprised me, was a couple of years ago, we went over to see some friends in the States, and Sayla was about 3. She hadn't actually been diagnosed yet. And we had been contemplating, do we, don't we have, you know, another baby? It was a real big question mark, particularly pre-diagnosis. And up until that point, I alluded to it earlier, kind of like I felt like my whole life had been around just like trying to fix a problem. Like that was my mentality. It was like, this is a problem that I am trying to fix. And, you know, it really affected every part of my life, which obviously it's going to, you know, your kids do anyway, but to a real extreme level. And I ended up talking with a kind of mutual friend, and she had a little girl with Down syndrome. But this lady, she was almost like her career had like taken off since she'd had her little girl. And her little girl was a couple of years older than Sayla. And in my life, I just felt like everything else in my life had just hit pause. Like everything got dropped and my whole life became about that. And I remember saying to her, like, I don't understand how you can like have like all these things that you're doing for like you and like, and she had other kids too, and like your other kids. And how do you do that with that, like, you know, whilst trying to provide the best that you can for your little girl? And she was just like, you know, Sayla doesn't need to be like the absolute nucleus of your life. Like, you, in order to be a thriving mom and have a happy and healthy family unit, like she is a vital, vital part. And obviously your kids are always like the center of the universe, but she is not it. And it at the time, I was just like offended. But as it kind of stuck with me, and I think over the years, since she's got the diagnosis and then we added Juniper to our family, it's actually been some really, really good advice that I think I took on board. And it actually helped me take a step back and be like, some of this stuff that I was fixating on was completely not even necessary. It was just like I didn't know how to just allow myself to thrive as well. I didn't know how to prioritize what I needed and potentially what my husband needed and potentially what was best for us as a family, not just what was always best for Sayla. And obviously we do, you know, take into account, you know, her need to a, you know, a lot, but I think allowing her just to be like not the absolute center has really helped shape our family dynamic. And it's helped me learn just to be her mum and not to be her physio and her carer and her OT and her administrator and all these things. It's like, actually, I can be her mum. And part of being her mum is that I also get to have my dreams as well as my dreams for her. I get to have my dreams for me, and I get to have my dreams for my relationship and my relationships and my friends and all those things. So I guess my kind of advice I'd pass on is like, it can be very easy, especially kids with physical disabilities where you're going to a lot of physio and there's a lot of options out there. It can be very noisy and very like easy to get sucked in, but it's like, not that we still do all those things, but it's just learning that, like, okay, like, I get to be mum. I get to focus on the needs of my whole family unit and try not to get so fixated on this one thing and trying to fix it.
What advice would you have for somebody struggling with a diagnosis or just SEND parenting in general?
I think it's recognising that struggle is huge and being honest with yourself that it's not easy. A lot of therapy can be about validating your experience and validating that, yeah, it's hard. So being gentle with yourself and I guess that first thing of like being kind and compassionate and going, I'm not a failure because I'm struggling. I'm just struggling because it's really hard. I think finding community, finding people who get it and who you can be honest with and be real with, whether that's friends and family, whether that's support groups, you know, whether it's people through this podcast that you kind of link up with, or even online relationships, like through Instagram, finding people who have a similar experience, that can give that feeling of not being alone in it. And yeah, where possible, opening up to family, partners, friends, being able to go, I'm really struggling, or this is how I feel about this part of our journey. How are you feeling about it? Okay, you feel differently, or let's discuss, or you feel the same, okay, let's find some kind of camaraderie in that. And then yeah, if you feel that it's something that needs a bit more space with someone who maybe isn't so involved in your life, someone who isn't going to have their own feelings, that can be the hard thing, opening up with family. They can have their own feelings around your situation or your diagnoses or whatever. So a neutral third party or a therapist can be helpful to kind of go, but this is what I'm thinking and feeling. Is that allowed? Yes, it is. It's normally the answer. So yeah, reaching out for support in those various different ways. It might be that therapy isn't the right time, and that's okay. It might be that a bit more time with people who get it is what you need. It's really hard. I think that's the biggest thing. There's so many different challenges in life, and this in particular, you know, and there's so many different layers to it, aren't there? Like you've talked about, sort of the unknown, the future, the kind of the shock level, the change in expectations. So it's not a surprise that people get overwhelmed and feel like it's too much and they're not sure how to deal with it. Therapy going to be a place to make sense of that, or at least get that validated.
What is the best piece of advice I've been given along Toby's journey? Don't look at what he can't do. Look at what he can do is the best piece of advice I've been given, because we are so conditioned to go, oh, but they can't do that. They can't do that. Look at the way he's holding his pen or not able to do this. Don't look at it like that. Look at what they can do, because they can do so many amazing things and they are incredible and amazing. So celebrate what they can do and don't get fixated on what they can't do.
Can you remember who it was that told you that?
I think it was my wife.
I feel like you should definitely give her the credit for that.
Yeah, I'm giving my wife the credit for that. I'm not sure who she heard it from or whether she came up with it by herself, but I remember when she told me that and I was like, oh my God, you're right. You know what? You're completely right. And it sort of changes your mindset a little bit. You're not there going, oh, but they can't do this. And I really want them to do that. You're there thinking, oh my God, look what you've just done. Look what you can do. You're incredible.
The best piece of advice that I've been given is to seek support from other people in the same situation and to get your advice from them. Because people who have walked the journey before you have got the lived experience, the knowledge, and most importantly, the empathy to understand what you're going through.
It's survival. It's you versus them, and you do what you need to. So trust your instincts. You're their voice. Learn the system. Knowledge is power. Know their rights. Know your rights. Find your tribe and give yourself grace, because what you're doing is, like, just no one understands. No one will ever get it until it becomes their life. But overall, it is survival. And yeah, you do what you need to. Don't let other people judge. Don't listen to it. They will never understand until they are in your shoes.
I was just told to enjoy, like, Florence. And at first it was like, as a baby, they just said, go home and enjoy Florence and do what you can with her, like, do all the baby classes, do this and that. But I've kind of, like, carried it on through a whole life so far. I just try and enjoy every moment that I have with her, whether it just be sitting in the house doing nothing or going out and doing something. Because again, I got in that mindset, oh, I need to do something every single day. But now I've, like, thought, oh, just sit in the house, just chill with her, enjoy her, and and spending time with her, not in a hospital, just in her environment. But yeah, that was, I can't really think of any other pieces of advice that I've been given, but that one stuck with us the night of our diagnosis. She just said, just go home and enjoy your baby. And that's what I've done ever since.
It's probably because it's such a long time ago now, but I feel like I don't know if I was given that much advice. I probably was given a lot of advice and didn't listen to it at all. But I feel like the two... So it's the two things that people have said to me that sort of resonated with me the most. And it's funny because one's really pragmatic and one's a bit more kind of mystical or something. So when we were in the hospital that first night, there was a gorgeous midwife called Flo. She was, you know, probably not far off retirement back then. And she came in with a cup of tea for us both because they let Paul stay overnight. Which
I was going to say, not you and the baby. That would be, that wouldn't be right.
little whiskey for him in his bottle. And she came in with a cup of tea and she said, I'm just going off shift now. She said, but I just wanted to tell you that they're only given to special people. Kids, babies like yours are only given to special people. And it was so funny because I think me and Paul are quite like, you know, pragmatic people. We're not, I wouldn't normally kind of respond to something like that, but it really meant a lot to both of us. It was a beautiful moment and it gave us some, because I've said that to some people and they've gone, oh God, what are we, you know, oof. But we loved it. It just felt, it was obviously meant from the heart with them. It just felt like a beautiful, special moment and gave us a lot of good feeling that night. And then the other thing, well, it's not advice at all, but I remember seeing a friend of mine and I didn't have Dan with me and I hadn't seen him since the baby was born. And he'll know who he is if he ever watches this, which is unlikely. But so I bumped into him and he said, oh, do you know what, did you have the baby and da da da? And I said, yeah, I said, Robert, he's got Down syndrome. And he said, oh, he said, what colour eyes has he got?
Oh.
And it took me a second for that to sink in. And I was like, wow, that's really beautiful, you know.
It is, because I think, obviously, it's hard. And I would have found it hard before having Leo, to know how to respond to that. And I think, like you, I had no experience of Down syndrome. I genuinely don't think I'd ever even said hello to someone with Down syndrome because I'd never had the opportunity to. And I think, I'll be very honest, I was very ignorant to all of this before I had Leo. And I think I would have naturally gone, oh God, I'm so sorry. And how lovely that wasn't his response, because we'll all have had that. We'll all have had people going, oh, I'm so sorry. And obviously now I know that's absolutely not the right thing to say.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like, you know, and I kind of went, I mean, it was only a few weeks old. And I kind of thought, shit, what colour eyes has he got? And then, you know, and so it was just a little lesson for me to go, Down syndrome, the heart defect. Like, this is a baby with eyes of a certain colour, blue, grey. Yeah. So they're not advice, but they were little comments that were useful. Important to me, yeah.
What amazing advice from amazing people. I really loved listening back to that and I hope that you did too. So that's it from me for this year. And it's the first year of the podcast because it started in March on World Down Syndrome Day, the 21st of March. So this is my first Christmas doing the Send Mum Club. Well, I say that, I'm actually having Christmas off, but you know what I mean. It's my first opportunity to say to you, thank you so much for listening this year. Thank you for letting me be in your ears or through your speakers and investing time into listening. I really appreciate it. And actually, I got a few messages from people saying that I was in their Spotify Wrapped podcast, like as the top podcast, and that made me feel so nice. So thank you so much. I have got some amazing guests lined up for you next year. I can't wait for you to hear the episodes. I can't wait to have the chat, and I can't wait to see where the Send Mum Club could go next year. If you haven't listened to all the episodes, maybe you could use a little bit of time over Christmas to listen back to some of them that you haven't heard yet. I hope you have a fantastic Christmas, a wonderful new year, and I'll see you back here in January.